Hello, hello. Welcome to What to Read Wednesdays, your go-to podcast for staff picks from your friends at Delaware County District Library. Here, we'll talk about books, podcasts, and other relevant media. I'm your host, Annie Pasma. Has it really been 2 weeks? They have just flown by for me. Probably because I was on vacation, but that's the way it normally goes, doesn't it? I was able to read a few books on vacation, and I will get to that in a moment. But for now, I will talk about a few housekeeping items. We are going to start modified story times in September, so be on the lookout for all the details of that in the coming months. Obviously, I'm super excited about these story times. I miss them so much. But we're still ironing out all the details. So follow us on social media, get our quarterly, give us a call as we get closer to September, and we will let you know all of the details for story times. I know I have talked about personalized picks here on this podcast, and although it is, again, one of my favorite things to do at DCDL, it has slowed down considerably. We're not getting very many requests. So it's going to go on a hiatus for now. It will come back probably during like Winter Reading Club or something like that. I will keep you updated as we go along. With that, we're going to get right into some recommendations.
Hello, my name is Mark Stevens, and I work circulation at the POW branch. The book I'd like to recommend to you today is entitled Harvest, and it's written by Jim Crace, C-R-A-C-E, and I would recommend this for adult readers. You know, I really need to focus more on books that I shove onto my to-be-read pile instead of tending to grab the latest trendy book. I just finished a real treat that I loved that I've wanted to read since it was published in 2013. I gave it 5 stars on my Goodreads account, and I highly recommend it to readers who love a combination of literary and historical fiction. This book has great writing. In fact, it was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize in 2013. And as an aside, the author actually won that prestigious award in 1999 for his book Quarantine, so you know he's a good author. I must caution that this book is not a page-turner, and in fact has a slow beginning. The plot is generally simple, but the atmosphere is menacing and edgy. Pretty much from the start of my reading of this book, I kept thinking this book was real quality. It really held my interest. The setting is in a medieval village in England, so small it doesn't have a name. It just has a boundary of stones that villagers warn their children they should never cross because the outside world has nothing to offer them. The economy of the village is adequate, but not prosperous, which is perhaps one of the reasons the village has only church land set aside, but no constructed church yet. The indentured farmers are simple and hardworking for a minor noble who is kind, but who is about to lose claim to the village and farm to his dead wife's cousin, who is a much more prosperous nobleman and will inherit the property. The setting is pastoral, and the author does a great job of describing the beautiful countryside. Besides the picturesque farmland, he describes a forest and a swamp. The forest, which surrounds the village, seems a little surreal and uninviting, and the swamp, which is used to dispose of dead animals and criminals, seems a little too close for comfort. Okay, now from that description, though, I do want to mention this book is not horror. It does not have any horror in it. It's just atmospheric. This novel could provide a great foundation for teaching the reading skill of cause and effect because the book opens with 2 simple, rather insignificant fires that set in motion a series of events that change the idyllic life of the villagers forever. The first fire is seen rather far away by the villagers as they finish the season's successful harvest. This fire is set by strangers as a signal that they have arrived and will meet the villagers eventually as they settle in the area. The second fire is one started accidentally, which burns down one of the nobles' outbuildings. These fires, plus the arrival of the nobleman's cousin and four servants, upset the calm order in this village. The main character and narrator is Walter, who has been the nobleman's most trusted servant for years. Both came to this village when the nobleman married the previous nobleman's daughter. Even though Walter has lived among the villagers for 11 years, working alongside them as a farmer, he is still considered to be an outsider. He's a good man and an extremely well-developed character. As the plot progresses through lies, betrayal, and murder, Walter will have to make desperate, soul-searching decisions. The book takes on an almost modern tone as the villagers confront danger and turn on each other to save themselves, even to the extent that some are accused of being witches. The novel's time span consists of only a week, and trust me, the villagers confront a lot in that small period of time. Some events threaten their economic way of life, while others threaten their actual life. This book has so many aspects that I think make it worth your time. It is far from a beach read, but if you like poetic, lyrical writing or plots that overshadow characters with foreboding or historical fiction set in medieval times, I highly recommend this book. It's only 258 pages and it is available on Libby.
Mark is just the best. Mark, if you're listening to this, you have to come on the podcast. I don't have you up on my list of people to interview. We need to get this rolling. It would be like a special episode, I think, is how I would want to do that. So, Mark, if you're listening, let's do it. Next, we're going to hear from my good friend, Megan, with her recommendations. The first one that Megan recommends is Aristotle and Dante Dive into the Water by Benjamin Ellery Sienas. I probably didn't say that correctly. In this sequel, we follow the new budding love between Ari and Dante. The prospect of facing a world that does not accept him is daunting for Ari, and just like any relationship, the two need to feel out this new thing between them. They do this with the love and support of their families, but it's not easy. They both navigate the waters through racism, death, and newfound friendships. This book is very well written and easy to read, but has a depth and emotion to it that I am happy to say traveled from the first book and into the second. We get to see the layers of love between Ari and Dante through the events that affect their lives. This ranges from reeling from the death of a parent to defending other queer class members. Their relationships within this book have highs and lows, and we see wonderful growth from Ari and Dante from many of these. They're both very relatable characters and are really well written, and the introspective view we see through Ari's journal is absolutely spot on. They are both portrayed as very mature teens, but with the mischievousness and impulsiveness that comes with youth. However, never in the entire story is Megan dismayed with the teenness that affects many YA novels, but neither do they seem overly adult and out of character. Overall, Megan absolutely adored this book. It does not succumb to the slump that many sequels are afflicted by, and the writing kept Megan engaged for the entire book. The writing is fantastic and enthralling, and Megan highly recommends this book even for adults. The next one she recommends is The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune. After a little reflection, when Megan finished this book, she has to say that she absolutely adored the story, but it took a little bit to really get into it. Linus's character did not speak to Megan at first, but the buildup of his characterization really paid off in the end. She listened to the audiobook, and they did a phenomenal job with it. Megan was nearly in tears when she listened to the epilogue. However, she did not know the premise of the book when she began listening to it, oddly enough, and she thinks that was what made her pause and have trouble staying invested. Again, that's on Megan, not on any fault of the book, per se. The flow of the writing in this book is just phenomenal, and the characters are fun and unique, even Lucy. After becoming invested in the story of Linus, Arthur, and all of the other children, Megan couldn't wait to hear more. I've heard a lot about The House on the Cerulean Sea, and I feel like I need to, like, put it higher up on my to-read list. Ah, just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Okay. Moving on. So my path has crossed often with my coworker CJ lately, whose recommendations I have given here on the podcast. I've become good friends with her, and I love sharing her recommendations. So CJ recommends The Dictionary of Lost Words by Pip Williams. In The Dictionary of Lost Words, Pip Williams writes about the power of words, spoken words and written words, where words come from and who uses them, and most importantly, who decides which words are recorded for posterity and which words are lost in time. Words define us, they explain us, and on occasion, they serve to control or isolate us. Pip Williams, The Dictionary of Lost Words. The novel is based on historical events that took place in Oxford, England at the height of the women's suffrage movement before and during World War I. At this time, scholars were collecting words and their definitions to write the first edition of the Oxford English Dictionary. Scholars who do this work are called lexicographers. Many of the characters in the novel are based on these lexicographers, their families, friends, and house servants. Esme is the daughter of one of the lexicographers who work in the scriptorium, a corrugated metal shed in the editor's garden. Her mother died when she was very young, and she is being raised by her father with the help of Lizzie, a young house servant. Esme spends much of her childhood sitting under the table where scholars work to sort words and definitions written on slips of paper. Esme plays with slips of paper with words that have been discarded or misplaced in the sorting process and starts collecting them to save in a wooden trunk under Lizzie's bed in the house. One of the slip paper slips she saves is inscribed with the word bondmaid and its definition. In 1901, this word is reported missing from the dictionary. As Esme grows older and more skilled, she moves from under the table to take on responsibilities to help the scholars in their work in the scriptorium and in the libraries in Oxford. As Esme spends time in the town and in the market with Lizzie as she does her shopping, she starts noticing that some words she hears cannot be found in the scriptorium collection. In particular, words used by the poor, the uneducated, and by women are discarded by the lexicographers as unimportant, vulgar, or without written proof of meaning. Esme starts collecting words and definitions to store in the wooden trunk, which she calls her Dictionary of Lost Words. She feels that these lost words have value, as do the people who use these words. Some words are more important than others. I learned this growing up in the scriptorium, but it took me a long time to understand why. Pip Williams, The Dictionary of Lost Words. And from here, Pip Williams writes the story of what Esme does with her growing understanding of why and with her collection of lost words. CGA appreciated the additional materials at the conclusion of the novel. She started paging back into the text of the novel. In the author's note, Williams provides insights into the ideas and questions that led her to write this book. The acknowledgments are formatted as examples of the word, definition, and proof slips used by the lexicographers. The timeline of the writing of the Oxford English Dictionary, the timeline of major historical events featured in the novel, and a photograph of the scriptorium staff are useful in placing the novel in its historical and social context. CJ found reading this book a delight and will probably read it again. Enjoy. Isn't that a great review? CJ has a beautiful way of writing. It's just so engaging. I love it. So, moving on to what I am reading. I'm actually reading The Old Mother West Wind by Thornton Burgess. It's a series that I read when I was a kid. I rediscovered it recently. They're beautiful and so fun. They're super old. You can find them online if you can't find them through the library, but I think you can. And they're just absolutely lovely. What I'm listening to, first of all, I just finished listening to Death on the Nile by Agatha Christie. If you read any of Agatha Christie's novels, I would recommend you listen to them again with David Suchet as the narrator. Like, read all of Agatha Christie books with David Suchet as the narrator. He is amazing. So, so good. But what I'm actually listening to right now is Extraordinary Ordinary People by Condoleezza Rice. It is a fascinating memoir and an amazing story of overcoming adversity. She grew up in segregated Birmingham, Alabama, and the stuff that they had to overcome is just very, very inspiring. So far, I really love it. What I'm looking forward to, The Last Graduate by Naomi Novik comes out September 28th. This is the second book of the highly anticipated A Deadly Education that I talked about many times on the podcast. As I mentioned before, I was hoping to really love A Deadly Education and didn't, but it was one that stayed with me for a long time. So I look forward to where The Last Graduate is going to go. It really can go anywhere. It's just, I have no idea. I have no, like, absolutely no predictions on how this one's going to go. And with that, we are done. If you have any questions or comments, email me at whattoread@delawarelibrary.org. As always, I love to hear from you. This is What to Read Wednesdays with Annie, and I'm your host, Annie Pasma. Thanks for listening.